entertainer, and entrepreneur answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
How was the start of your week? And are you ready for the top cowboys of political wrangling in primetime drive time? The American Adversaries on the AM 660, The Answer Ranch, and the Mercury Free Studio Corral. I'm your partner and fellow ranch hand in this horse opera, Lair Adams. Now, if you heard our show last night, you would have heard our beautiful glow girl, Sunny Summerland, talk about the mess many Californians like her are worried about, the flood of immigrants. Even the liberals there see the danger and folly of basically no border. Today, protesters tried to stop buses of illegals being forced on their community. Now, I happened to catch a sign of one of the supporters. One of the supporters held. It said, "Give it back, Caucasians. You're on stolen land. Stolen from the Indians and the Mexicans." Do you see where, folks, where this is headed? Just wait till illegals get the vote. It's over for that state. But not our host, who immigrated to his microphone, Christopher Hart.
All right. Thank you so very much, Lair Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, once again for being with us on this fine Monday afternoon here in Central Florida. You are listening to the American Adversaries in Drive Time on AM 660. The Answer, coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. And don't forget, for the best in Mercury Free dentistry, call Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. All right. We got the team ready to go here today. We got Abe Katzman going to be checking in with us here shortly from Jerusalem. We got Lucas, who's got us on the head cam, or the Luke cam, I guess we can call it here. And so you can go to Ustream.tv and see what we're doing here in the studio. And, of course, we got Nick LeCicero on the bridge, so we are in good hands tonight. 407-774-8255 is our number. And, of course, you're welcome to call at any time, and especially if you have a question for Abe. Certainly look forward to talking to Abe Katzman tonight. Because they got their share of troubles over there, just as we have our share of troubles here on our border. The difference being is these are created by ourselves, whereas over there the problems that Israel has are being created without their input, if you will. We'll have a lot to talk about with Abe. Nostra Dennis, our executive producer, is going to join us a little bit later on, too. We've got a couple of interesting stories to bring you when he joins up with us here. And just real quickly, I just want to throw this out there. Tomorrow, we're going to have Jeff Doughty on the show. I hope you guys remember Jeff Doughty because... Nostradamus says, "This would make me the rodeo clown." I don't know. The shoe fits, right? But those are big shoes to fill now there, Nostradamus. But Jeff Doughty, if you remember, he was our legal go-to guy in the George Zimmerman case, which wrapped up about a year ago now. So we're going to have him in the studio to talk about things that have happened since the Zimmerman case and just sort of look back and review. And, you know, there's been some developments just last week. And we'll take that up with Jeff Doughty tomorrow. Before we get too far into the show, it is time for today's episode of The Dumb and the Feckless, the true story of the blood feud between the Clintons and the Obamas, as told by Edward Klein in his brand new best-selling book. "It had rained the day before, and the course was still wet," recalled a caddy at the Andrews Air Force Base golf course. "There were puddles everywhere, really bad conditions. It was a gray, humid day, and it looked like it was going to rain again." The two presidents, Obama and Clinton, arrived in a grumpy mood. Both looked on edge, like they weren't happy to be there. The muggy weather wasn't the chief cause of Bill Clinton's and Barack Obama's discontent. The simple truth was that each of these vain and self-obsessed men had come here to strike a deal with someone he didn't trust. And what made matters worse, they didn't have much choice. Political calculations had forced their hands. Each man wanted something from the other. And to say that they were ambivalent about today's golfing get-together would have been a gross understatement. Indeed, based on the author's year-and-a-half-long conversations with sources close to both men, it was hard to avoid the conclusion that Clinton and Obama approached the golf game with a premonition of betrayal. The feeling must have been as palpable as the sticky, oppressive weather. This was a hazardous venture. Nothing less than two presidents, two presidencies, Obama's and Hillary Clinton's, hung on the outcome of their deal. For the golf game with Obama, Clinton wore black slacks and a bright red golf shirt. Or Obama was in gray with khaki pants and a golf hat. As always, he had his BlackBerry strapped to his belt so that he could stay in touch with Valerie and Michelle. The two presidents climbed into a golf cart and Obama took the wheel. Bill Daley and Doug Band followed in a separate cart. Clinton didn't waste any time reminding Obama that as president, he had presided over 8 years of prosperity, while Obama had been unable to dig the country out of the longest financial doldrums since the Great Depression. Bill is one of the few people who can intimidate Barack, and he enjoys that, said a Clinton family friend who discussed the golf game with the former president. He presses his advantage when they are one-on-one. A lot of presidents and ex-presidents are at loggerheads, but these two, considering they are of the same party, are especially testy. Bill got into it right away, this person continued. He told Obama, Hillary and I are gearing up for a run in 2016. He said Hillary would be the most qualified, most experienced candidate, perhaps in history. His reference to Hillary's experience made Obama wince, since it was clearly a shot at his lack of experience when he ran for president. And so Bill continued to talk about Hillary's qualifications and the coming campaign in 2016. Barack didn't bite. He changed the subject several times. Then suddenly, Barack said something that took Bill by complete surprise. He said,
Michelle would make a great presidential candidate, too.
Bill was speechless. Was Barack comparing Michelle's qualifications to Hillary's? Bill said that if he hadn't been on a mission to strike a deal with Barack, he might have stormed off the golf course then and there. Tune in tomorrow, folks, to find out, who is Doug Band? Where did he come from to play golf with these two men on The Dumb and the Feckless? The true story of the blood feud, the Clintons versus the Obamas, great new book by Edward Klein. And it's fascinating reading, and you folks need to get out there and get your hands on a copy if you can. And Ed, don't forget, Edward Klein is going to be a guest on our show 1 week from Wednesday.
And last night, Chris, a caller had called in and said she had seen something on Fox News where Barack had said he had picked him, but I believe it was from his book. That, I mean, I don't know that there's any news out there.
Well, it came up. As a matter of fact, what Larry's referring to, last night we got a caller who said they saw on Fox yesterday that Barack said he would prefer to back Elizabeth Warren, the new senator from Connecticut, I think it is. Massachusetts. Yeah. The new senator from Massachusetts. She replaced Brown. And certainly that falls in, you know, with the feud. And they were talking about it this morning on CNBC. Now, I wasn't able to hear a source other than that they were just talking about it amongst themselves.
They're talking about Klein's book as the source.
All right. Now, I haven't seen that in Klein's book yet. Now, I have to admit, I have not read it from cover to cover, so it may be in the back end of the book that I haven't seen
yet. Well, today on Fox, they were talking about Klein's assertions to that point.
Yeah, certainly there's no question about it, though, that Barack Obama is let's just say, not enamored with the idea of Hillary Clinton becoming the nominee and the next president. And that will become more evident, I think, as we continue the saga of the dumb and the feckless, because it is all pretty well spelled out in this book. And Wall Street Journal today, front page, the bottom of the fold. Let me pull it out here so I can hold it up for the cam, for the loop cam over here. Let's see. Actually, above the fold. There it is. Can you see it? It says Clinton begins to move away from Obama ahead of 2016. And it's all the article is all about how she's staking out ground, separating herself from Barack Obama. And certainly, if you're a Democrat and you want to get elected in 2016, and we see this also amongst Democrats here in 2014, you need to separate yourself from Barack Obama.
Well, according to Klein's book, Barack actually thinks he's afraid Hillary will undo a lot of what he's done, that she is basically going to go more towards the center. She won't be far left enough. And that's why Elizabeth Warren would make a better choice for him, because she probably would leave everything he put in place and then continue on with even more liberal mayhem.
Indeed, that is part of his reasoning. It certainly is. The other part of his reasoning is that the Obamas truly detest the Clintons, and he cannot stand the idea of a Clinton being the next president of the United States. They just detest one another. There's no question about this.
And a lot of voters out there, Chris, I'm hearing more and more people say, we're tired of dynasties. We don't want to see another Bush. We don't want to see another Clinton. We don't want to see another Obama.
Well, and thank God if that is the revelation or the realization that the country is coming to, because we don't need any of the above mentioned. We can do just fine without them. And, okay, I see we have Abe Katzman on the line, so we'll go ahead and take the break so that when we come back, we can go right to Abe Katzman. And he is checking in tonight from Jerusalem. So if you have any questions for him, 407-774-8255.
Yeah, maybe he'll have some pointers on immigration. The Israelis seem to be very good at what they do. So, anyway, folks, American Adversaries, like Chris said, is here 6 days a week. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You are listening to the American Adversaries in Drive Time on AM 660 The Answer. And don't forget, you can get some of those great new bumper stickers by going to AM 660 The Answer Bumper Stickers. com. Pick one or pick them all, and we'll send them to you for free. That's AM 660 The Answer BumperStickers.com. All right.
Now, I bet Abe would love to have some.
Maybe he would. All right. Let's go to Abe now. Of course, Abe Katzman is our man in Jerusalem, and you can find his great work at AbeKatzman.com. He's an excellent commentator and columnist, so let's go to him right now. Abe, how you doing tonight?
Doing okay. Trying to dodge the rockets.
Well, I want to start there, if we can. Now, you live in Jerusalem. Can you kind of give us a little bit of the lay of the land, where you live in relation to where the violence is occurring?
There's a lot of violence going on, so we have to be specific about which violence we're talking about.
Well,
in this case, we're talking about the rockets that are coming from Gaza. Gaza is at the on the coast, on the kind of middle southern end of Israel. Israel is not that big a country.
Right.
So it's about 50 miles from Gaza to Tel Aviv. The whole country, north to south from Gaza, Gaza is maybe about 100 miles. Mm. So if they've got rockets with ranges that get that go that far, then pretty much the entire populated area of the country is in range. Jerusalem is about 45 miles from Gaza. So far, the rockets that they've been firing are rockets with a range of about 25 miles. So far, Jerusalem has been okay, although there were air raid sirens earlier in a kind of a nearby town. Apparently a false alarm. When the sirens go off, you don't know whether it's going to be a false alarm or not.
Oh, yeah. You have to assume that it's not. Abe, I was actually speaking in particular about the violence that was going on in Jerusalem itself. What we've seen, at least on TV here, you know, it's interesting too. And I wanted to go here, so let me just take this opportunity to bring it up. Before the Palestinian youth was killed, this story was, you'd have a hard time finding it on any of the news networks. Now that a Palestinian boy has been killed in all of this, it's all over the place. And what I saw over the weekend is that there was some evidently rioting or something to that effect going on in East Jerusalem. Is that anywhere close to where you live? And can you confirm that that is continuing to happen?
Yeah, that's just a few miles from me, and that's been going on for about six consecutive days now. There have been rioting, they're burning tires, they're stoning cars and throwing Molotov cocktails at buses. They've been setting forest fires in the areas out just outside Jerusalem also. It is a few miles from me. Jerusalem is not that big a city, so it's odd because it's really not that far away, and yet at the same time, it's a perfectly nice, relaxed summer evening in my neighborhood.
Wow. Well, that's good news anyway. At least you are protected and you're safe. But you do say that the country is under rocket attack. Let me back up for a second. The violence in Jerusalem, is there any chance, do you think, of that spreading to other parts of the country, that particular type of violence?
That type of violence already has spread.
Okay.
There are a number of Arab-Israeli towns where there has also been rioting. Most of the riot, I think it's quieted down in many of those places. But the one area, where this Arab teenager who was murdered, the neighborhood that he came from, that's the area where there's been the most rioting. One other thing they did there is they destroyed the Jerusalem has a fairly new light rail system, and they intentionally built the system to go through both Jewish and Arab neighborhoods. And in this particular neighborhood, they've destroyed the light rail stations, torn up areas next to the track, and apparently it's going to be months before there are going to be any trains able to run there again.
At least, I would assume. Abe, the Palestinian boy who was murdered, it's being reported in the press today that Israel has already arrested six individuals and are they being charged with the kid's murder?
I'm not sure what the charges are or exactly what charges there have been made so far. But yes, effectively, yes, that's the way it's been reported. Israel across the board has condemned this. Israel is ashamed that this has happened. You see this across the political spectrum. The prime minister went so far as to call the father of the boy who was murdered to apologize and for such a despicable act.
Yeah.
The one thing you were saying about how the story of the three Israeli boys who were kidnapped and killed barely made a ripple in the news.
Yeah.
Along those same lines, to the same day that they made the arrests of these Jewish teenagers and the killing of the Arab teen, they also solved the murder of a 19-year-old Jewish girl by an Arab, also a nationalist crime, a terror act. And that has, again, I'd be surprised if that makes it into the American press at all. Everybody seems to be focused more on the Israeli murder of this Arab boy.
Yeah. Abe, we got 1 minute left in this segment. Can you stay through?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
Real quickly, I did see, as you mentioned, the minister had called the family of the Palestinian boy was killed. And I believe I also saw where he tried to or is going to try to bring the two families together, the family of that boy and the family of one of the Jewish boys who was murdered together. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, one of the mother of one of the Jewish boys, actually the American mother, Rochelle Frankel is her name, has, I believe, also reached out to the family of the Arab family, and also, you know, spoke in terms of that there's a bond that I guess none of us can understand that they both share of having a child killed.
Well, that's where we'll pick it up when we come back, Abe. And once again, folks, we are talking with Abe Katzman, who is in Jerusalem tonight. And we'll be right back.
Here is tonight's American Adversaries Soundbite RX News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Today's Soundbite RX News Minute is brought to you by My Liberty Threads. American made, America proud. MyLibertyThreads.com.
Hi, this is Christopher Hart for SoundbiteRx.com. A lot of great new stuff, great stories in depth at SoundbiteRx.com today. Starting out with, once again, about the IRS. Did you know that Lois Lerner and one of her aides by the name of Nicole Flax were talking about targeting the conservative groups before their emails crashed? Conveniently, then the emails crashed. You'll find a great story about that at SoundbiteRx.com. Also, the reporter who has been printing the leaks from Snowden has stopped. Last night, he was supposed to reveal the names of American citizens who have been under investigation by the NSA, but that list was delayed last night. You'll find the story and explanation at SoundbiteRx.com. You'll also find the Reuters poll that showed President Obama being chosen as the worst president since World War II at SoundbiteRx.com. And I want to focus just a couple of minutes on a story that you'll find at SoundbiteRx.com today that it's troubling. It's a sad story. It's from the Jerusalem Post, and it has to do with the kidnapping of those three Israeli Jewish youths. Did you know, folks, that there was a 911 tape that one of the boys had managed to call 911? Gilad Shair reached 911, and the 911 operator basically heard the murders of these three youths and then heard the murderers singing and celebrating in the background. This was not an accident. This was clearly an act of terrorism and should be portrayed for what it is. And it's up to the American media to try to get their act together and get this stuff out. But at least SoundbiteRx.com does it. Folks, please go there, see the story, read it, tell it. We'll be right back. All right, and don't forget, folks, not only can you hear us, but you can see us because we're on the Luke Cam tonight on Ustream.tv.
I'm behind the reindeer.
That's right. You can see Lair Adams, and he's got the appropriate side of the reindeer facing him. I am Christopher Hart. The man you cannot see, however, but you can still hear, is, of course, Abe Katzman, who is coming to us tonight from Jerusalem. Abe, did you hear the Soundbite News Minute where I talked about the 911 tape, and had you heard it yet?
Yes. I had not heard the entire tape. I think I'm one of the few people in the country that has not. It was spread around virally, and everybody's been talking about it.
Abe, I'd like to compare, if I can, the reaction to these two events, the murder of those three children and the murder of the Palestinian child. First, here we have, pretty much within days, we have six people apprehended in Israel for the murder of the Palestinian. You have expressions of shame and remorse from all across Israel to that murder. Now, let's juxtapose that against the reaction from the Palestinians to the murder of these three Israeli children. Cheering and celebration, holding up three fingers. No arrest yet. Even though, if I'm not mistaken, the Israelis have given the names of suspects to the Palestinians. Am I wrong in any of that?
No, that's exactly right.
Given that, Is there any reason to believe that having these two families come together can make any real difference?
It's a good symbolic gesture, but one gesture is not going to eliminate such stark differences between two cultures and or the differences between two peoples who are effectively at war. The differences are very stark. In general, especially the Islamist elements in the Arab world are almost, celebrate death and martyrdom. These killers of the Arab boy, the Israeli killers of the Arab boy, are not going to have streets named after them. They're not going to have parks named after them or soccer tournaments or anything else. They're not going to be heroes. If anything, they're being called traitors.
I was just going to say, the problem for me is it doesn't seem with Israel, it doesn't seem that restraint works. And they keep using that. Oh, we've got restraint. It looks good for the rest of the world. But basically, it doesn't work.
The question is, what is the alternative?
Right.
And what are we going to allow ourselves to do?
Right. Yeah. You're in a
don't have a choice.
I was going to say you're in a no-win situation where that's what you have to do. But I would like to continue though the point that we were going about the culture, because last Tuesday in the Wall Street Journal, the day after we had you on the show last time, a fellow by the name of Brett Stevens, a regular writer for them, wrote an article entitled "Where Are the Palestinian Mothers?" And he talks about the mothers' attitude in Palestine towards, for instance, suicide bombings and sending their children to suicide bombings. And he recounts this one instance where a mother was upset because her son had been talked into committing or attempting to commit a suicide bombing. He's now in an Israeli prison. His name was Abdo. And he basically was a young man of diminished intelligence, shall we say. He wasn't the brightest, bulb in the pack. And she was upset, but she was upset because he wasn't yet 18. If he'd have been 18, it would have been okay for her son to be turned into a quote-unquote martyr. When that is the culture that exists, it's just hard for me to see a good way out of this other than basically dividing the country. I mean, physically dividing the country like you've done with a wall or a fence. Abe?
The problem exists in this instance also. The mother of one of the Palestinians that Israel named as being a suspect in the murder of the three Israeli boys has basically come out and talked about how proud she is of what her sons have achieved, as she said. And she, even though she suspects her son is not, he's hiding somewhere. So she wished him a victorious Ramadan. That's the difference.
It is. And the reason I'm bringing this up, folks, is because this is the reality. This is the reality of the situation that we're dealing over there. And when President Obama or John Kerry comes loafing down the street, whistling and with their fingers in their hands in their pockets saying, oh, yeah, we can create peace over there. We can bring these. It's unrealistic. It is an unrealistic expectation that they are setting up. A whole cultural shift needs to occur. Now, here's a prediction for you, Abe. The woman who's the mother of the boy who was the Palestinian boy who was killed, now that's not the family that's from Tampa over here, is it?
No. So the family from Tampa is a cousin.
Cousin, right.
Yeah.
All right. I was just going to say, if there is any serious attempt on that mother's part to reconcile with Israel, I would just have to say that she would herself become a target of Palestinian terrorists, because they do not want peace. They do not want peace with Israel. And this is the sad reality that we have to deal with in this world. And that if we are going to want the Palestinians to make peace with Israel, we're going to have to change their attitude. And It's not going to be easy to do, but it's not going to occur by Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or anybody else with some grand idea that they're going to bring these disparate cultures together and make peace. It's just there's going to have to be more realism brought to the process is what I think I'm trying to say here, Abe.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. There seems to be this attitude among those, especially in Washington, that they're just missing some kind of elusive formula, that it's if they would just come up with the right balance,
right,
they could end up solving everything. And the problems are just so much more fundamental than that. It's not a function of it's not a battle over land so much as it is a battle over Israel's right to exist.
Exactly.
And whether the Arab peoples here will allow Israel to live in peace. And that's the issue. You can't solve that by coming up with some new formula for land for peace.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Abe, one other question I have for you, and I'm going to veer off onto another topic. Iran, you know, the deadline is approaching for these talks. Oliver North has predicted boldly on our show that he thinks there's already been a deal inked. All of this couldn't be happening at a worse possible moment. Now I'm reading articles where the British are really warming up to Iran. Is Europe just in total retreat from any commitment to Israel's security?
It's hard to tell. It certainly feels that way sometimes. That much I'll say, but there's probably a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. At least that's my hope. That's not much to bank on, but I think it's probably the case.
Well, the follow-on to that is, if that is the perception, first you have the perception that America is deserting Israel, and that's a real perception. In other words, it's a real happening. And then you have Europe. Doesn't that just feed into the instability of the entire Middle East? In other words, if they were stronger in their support of Israel, wouldn't it be basically a governor on the violence?
I think so. I think to some degree it would be. Look, on the other hand, there was plenty of violence aimed at Israel before this president became president, and I'm sure that there will be long after his term is over. So the Middle East is a flammable place, and every so often it catches fire. I don't, as much as I think that this president has done a very poor job trying to manage those fires, I don't totally blame him for what's going on. I think that he's managed it terribly. I think that pulling away, he's allowed certain powers to rise up, especially ISIS. Had he handled things differently in Iraq, that wouldn't be a problem. Had he handled things differently in Syria, we probably wouldn't be seeing ISIS now. On the one hand, I don't want to let him off the hook. I think he's done a very bad job. But on the other, I think that the fundamental causes of violence here go well beyond anything that he's done.
Yeah, and anything he's capable of solving, that's for sure. All right, Abe, we're going to have to leave it there tonight. But as always, and especially now, you are in our prayers. So stay out of the way of those rockets, man.
It's always appreciated. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. And we will talk to you next week. That is, of course, our man Abe Katzman in Jerusalem, giving us the story from the city there where a lot of the violence is occurring. AbeKatzman.com. That's KATSMAN.com. AbeKatzman.com. I was just telling Lara, I saw a show on one of the, and I'll get the details for you, one of the food channels last night. I woke up late and was going to watch a little food channel, put me back to sleep, and there was a show on how Muslim extremists are quietly and quote-unquote peacefully taking over the United States. So I will get you more details on that particular show, and we'll see if we can't get Nostradamus to dig up some of these people to get them on the show. This came out in 2012.
One of them couldn't be Valerie Jarrett, could it?
No, she wasn't mentioned.
But, I understand, but still.
But groups like CARE and other were all mentioned, and it's a very elaborate network of treachery going on right under our noses, as most of our listeners already know. But this show laid it out in particularly good detail, to say the least. It kept me up quite a while. All right, Nostradamus, you there?
I am, and you know, I was listening to you talking to Abe, and to me, listening to anybody from outside the Middle East try to solve the Middle East problem reminds me of a phrase Johnny Guns likes to use. It's like watching a monkey trying to do a math problem. There's no way you're going to come up with a solution if they themselves can't come up with one themselves.
Well, and this is what I was telling Laird during the break. What was made very clear in the show that I was watching last night is the Palestinians get this and understand this if you don't already, folks, and I know many of you do. The Palestinians do not want peace with Israel under any circumstances, no way whatsoever. And groups,
they want them dead.
Well, exactly. And groups here in the United States, you remember when Clinton was trying to, he had his peace initiative, and he had Arafat, and he had, I believe it was Shimon Peres in the White House, and they were on the verge of supposedly making a deal. And Arafat is the one who walked away from it. And one of the reasons why was because he was being pressured by groups here in the United States, groups like CARE. And that's just one. There are many of them. And guess where they took their schooling from, their approach to learning how to manipulate, if you will, American politics?
Let me guess, Saul Alinsky.
Well, basically liberals, yes. Exactly. They've done the same thing. They've started all these student groups the same way as the hippies back then, the Weather Underground. They followed the recipe book to a T. And their goal is the peaceful conquering of the United States of America, and by doing it with our own political system. It makes you, you know, with all these people saying Barack Obama is basically a Muslim trying to turn the country over to Muslims, it gives it a whole lot more credibility.
Well, you know, that was my point on my opening about the immigration in California. I mean, if you just let everybody wants to come over into California and then give them the vote, eventually they can vote something to happen where, you know, let's face it, we've got to give California back, or hey, well, it's just not fair.
Yeah, this goes much deeper than the vote. Because eventually they want a country where there is no vote. You have to understand.
Oh, Sharia law, of course.
Exactly. And there is no vote. Period. So it doesn't matter.
Especially for women.
Exactly. All right. Dennis, you've got some stories. First, I want to start, and I see Dave, you're on the line. We'll get to you. Just hang with us. Real quickly, Nostradamus, the movie numbers for America, Imagine the World Without Her.
Sure. The movie's down a little bit from its July 4th open, but still, after being only on about 1,100 screens, it grossed nearly $4 million in 5 days. That compared to all the other top 10 movies that were in 3,000-plus locations. It ended up at number 11 for the week, but it is also the number 11 political documentary of all time already. It's just outside the top 10 in all-time gross numbers.
And it's just really getting started because it hasn't even been out a week yet. So, folks, it's playing all over Central Florida, and you can find a location near you. Please do get out and see it because it'll educate you as you deal with liberals out there because it basically arms you with some pretty powerful arguments against the liberal mentality. All right, real quickly, because I want to go here because I see the caller's topic on the line here. There was a great deal of Chicago violence this past weekend.
Yes, the shotguns, red glare, and the bombs bursting in air were the highlight over the weekend, 4th of July weekend in Chicago. 9 dead and 60 injured in multiple shootings over the 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This is up from last year, but it's down from 2 years ago when Chicago led the nation in homicides, more than 500. Last year, they actually did better. They had only 415 homicides, but Chicago still had three times as many murders last year as New York City, which is triple its size.
And don't, you know, make no mistake, folks, this violence can be traced to gangs and drugs. Gangs and drugs. All right, let's.
And bad politicians.
Hold on, Nostradamus. We'll come back to you, but I want to go to Dave now. Dave, thank you for holding, and your comments, please.
Yes, you're stealing part of my thunder. 2 or 3 weeks ago, you had 23 people shot in Chicago.
Yeah.
This past weekend, it was 60 and 11 dead. Last year, the mayor of Philadelphia was decrying the crime, and the people wanted the National Guard because the police were being outgunned. When are y'all going to do a show, or maybe a series of shows, and what the heck?
A series of shows about what?
Yeah, well, about crime and just the overwhelming violence in our large cities.
Okay.
Philadelphia, Atlantic City, Chicago, Atlanta, pick your city, New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's pandemic. Detroit.
Yeah. Well,
Detroit, you stand a better chance of living in Afghanistan than you do Detroit.
You're absolutely
Are you
right.
Are you kidding me?
The gang.
That's why I don't go there.
Nothing is being done. It goes on year after year after year.
All right. You're absolutely right, Dave, and I appreciate that. And we do try to cover it as much as we can. I have to tell you, though, an hour show every day, it ain't enough. But we'll try to do a better job of covering that type of thing. And thank you for your call. He's absolutely right, Dennis. I wish we could spend more time on this. But basically, to me, it comes down to two issues. You've got it's gangs and drugs. And in that is the solution. Do something about those issues and you will come to the solution. Now, when it comes to drugs, unfortunately, there's not much else we can do that we haven't already tried except legalization.
Yeah, it is guns and drugs, and Dave's numbers, or his at least attitude, is right. But the numbers say that violent crime across America has gone down over the past 20 years. However, it's gone up in urban areas quite a lot.
Right, because you are seeing gang violence escalate as your average garden variety violence decreases.
And where do the urban planners of the future at every turn want to make us move to? To urban areas.
And be susceptible to gang violence so that we'll want to have the police protect us. But there was one positive story that came out of Chicago, or at least Illinois, this week. There was one fella who, because of new Illinois laws, was able to protect himself with a gun.
Well, it would have been a tragedy, and it just would have blended into all the other tragedies in Illinois. But a veteran with concealed carry permit was forced to shoot a man who began firing on him and a group of friends on Friday night. Had he done this last year, he would have been thrown in jail because the concealed carry permit would not have been available to him.
And I believe had he done it in Chicago, he might have gotten in trouble as well. But there is a solution to this, and it is to not be victims, to be prepared. You know, if you live in a bad area, you got to arm yourself. You got to be there. You got to take care of yourself. Part of the problem, I think, with Dave's frustration is it's that people just seem to accept that there's nothing they can do about it. Well, yes, there is. You can take care of yourself. You can learn how to use a weapon. And so there is a solution. But more general term, I'm afraid it's going to take a radical rethink of the war on drugs. Because when you face the reality, the gangs, the cartels, and yes, even the terrorists get the vast majority, and in some of their cases, all of their money from the drug trade.
Well, right now, their big income is the artificial marijuana.
Who?
That's out there. The cartels in the Middle East. They're supplying a lot of this artificial marijuana, and they're making. They had a big story the other day that they've busted millions and millions of dollars is going to the Middle East.
Well, because it is illegal, and as long as it remains so, the bad guys are going to make a ton of money off of it. I'm sorry, that's just the reality. It's going to require some serious rethink in terms of how we deal with illicit drugs. Addiction is a serious problem, and it has to be dealt with. But it makes it much harder when you have drug cartels, terrorists, and gangs making bucket loads of money easily by preying on those addicts. That is just compounding the problem. It goes in no way to solving it.
American Adversaries, we're done. See you tomorrow.